We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 346. Right? 46? Sounds good to me. It's July 4th. It's July 4th morning. Happy July 4th, everybody. Happy Independence Day, Scott. I'm wearing my Yankees bucket hat in honor of the holiday.
Yeah. I can see that. You are wearing your bucket hat, and it's early morning on July 4th. We decided to do it this morning because, you know, why not? Last night was a little late. We're usually more chipper and a little bit better in the mornings. I think we can think more clearly. We have coffee. Coffee definitely helps me.
Mm-hmm.
And usually after I record, if we do it at like 10:30 at night, I'm getting too old for that shit. Let's get that out there. Two, I can't fall asleep for like another hour after we record.
Yes.
And that's the worst part because then you're like, I'm just wired. And then like, you know, staying
running
up till recording till 11:30. Not even that. It's just like, I don't know. I get hyped up when we start talking and then it's just like hard to bring that back down and just go to sleep. So
you get the endorphin rush.
Yeah, I guess so. It's a little bit of a, you know, getting in front of that mic and just firing off some Yankee stuff.
It was funny that you mentioned morning person. I am too a morning person. I think we both are. If we ever get a radio show, we should ask for that morning time slot. I think that's when we'd be best. But I was golfing with my dad earlier this week and we had a very early tea time. So we were in the car at 5:45 in the morning and he is just firing on all cylinders at that time of morning. He did
just,
not stop
just pissed
talking.
Off at the world,
just like Yankee take after Yankee take in the car. He was
did you
firing.
Record it?
I wish I did.
See,
I was driving
again.
I was the one driving. I should have just pressed record on my iPhone.
All right, here's another look, man. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, you've recorded it in Rhode Island, and because you're at your parents' house in Rhode Island right now.
Yes, I am
on a little bit of a vacation, and you've recorded there many times. You went to a game with your father to a BP crew event in at Pawtucket when Scranton was up there. Like all of these things have happened with your dad, supposedly. Zero evidence. I have not seen your father one time since you've recorded up there. Not once.
Yeah, he lives
I didn't see anything
ready to strike.
I saw nothing at the game. Nothing. I'm really starting to believe that he doesn't exist.
Well, he
I know.
Exists.
Oh,
you've met
weird.
Him. You have met him.
No, I haven't.
He came to a regular season Bronx Pinstripes event last year.
I don't think so. I don't think I was there.
Oh, you might not have been. It was the September one. Did you miss that one?
I don't remember. Yeah, because there was a hurricane, so I did not. There was a hurricane for that one.
Yes. So
and there was a lot of damage, and I couldn't
you know
leave.
What? Just imagine. You can imagine his takes.
No, I'm what I'm doing is I'm talking for the people. The people don't believe it either. That's the thing.
Believe it just
we
fine.
We need some visual evidence.
Well, I think it's fitting that we're talking about my dad and I'm wearing his father, so my grandfather's bucket hat.
Nice. Yeah, I know that thing's been in the family for a while.
Been in the family a while. It's gone through the wash many times because it has been dirty. Used to fish in this thing.
Very good. Still have some hooks in there?
No, but bucket hats are coming back. I've been wearing... Do you remember I wore this hat?
You're really hoping that's the case.
I wore this hat to, like, before we did any...
Oh, I remember.
Event.
Oh, I remember.
Like and the Bronx and Pinstripes outing in the bleachers. Was it the, was it?
All I know
Aaron
is
Judge
it, was it was before that I knew that it was your grandfather's.
So you were ready to rip into me.
Yeah,
we definitely had the podcast at the time, but I believe it was the Tyler Austin Aaron Judge day. So the day after A-Rod. Basically, it is the line in the sand and when the Yankees just transitioned into the new Aaron Judge Yankees. Alex Rodriguez had retired. Gary
yes.
Sanchez was up.
Yeah, it was
Judge
like a clear
up.
Day.
August,
a very
I think it was August 16th, 2016. That
yeah,
is the
16th
point
or the
time.
18th. I think it was the 18th. But
whatever it was a glorious and hot day. But I remember I was wearing this bucket hat.
If you were wearing that bucket hat, there is one person that will definitely be able to tell us. And that's JJ, because we definitely saw him that day.
Right, if he remembers.
Oh, he would remember.
I think I have a picture. I think I have a picture.
I highly doubt that would get by him.
Yeah,
I can't see that getting by.
Well, so she told me bucket hats are coming back. They're back in style, apparently.
Who's she?
Leanne.
Oh, Leanne told you.
Yeah, apparently Kylie Jenner or something has been wearing bucket hats.
Oh, yeah?
So once a Kardashian wears something, you know that's going to be popular again.
Oh, all right.
But I was wearing this thing since 2016. I just want everyone to know that.
Way to stick through it. Way to stick through the trend. Sometimes you just got to like power through the bad times.
So how are you feeling after how do you think the Yankees did coming back from London? Because they lost the first game to the Mets. The bullpen had a little bit of an implosion. You could just kind of tell that
you mean maybe the team looked a little lethargic.
Yeah, Ottavino couldn't grip his slider. I know he was he had no break on his slider. That could just be a bad outing. That could be like the ball was extra slick for some reason. And he just couldn't grip it. Like there could be a number of different reasons. I just saw a bunch of people calling out the London series and calling out the jet lag and all of the hysterics around the travel as, you know, oh, now great, we're losing to the Mets who are in a tailspin anyway.
I mean, we already predicted that before the game happened, that was going to be the narrative if they had lost. So it's an easy thing to lean on, but I don't really buy it because they went out there and, you know, they got to Wheeler early, very early, and then he locked it down. And you're seeing in the beginning of this, you're like, okay, they're getting, they got to the pitching early, but then Wheeler settled down and actually stayed in the game and had a pretty good outing. And they couldn't really get much off of the there could have been some like, you know, early energy and then, you know, whatever. But I just have a hard time believing it and just leaning on that as a thing. Because when Paxton comes out there, fires six innings and, you know, you get one of the better outings you've had from him in a long time. You know, that should be enough right there in game to like turn the switch on and let's go. So I just think that they ran into Wheeler, who started pitching better throughout the game. And they couldn't put it together towards the end. And really, it was an Adam Ottavino meltdown. Was the reason.
Well, that's the thing about the Mets. They have the starting pitching. You run up to any of those starting pitchers and they can shut you down, but you expect to get into the bullpen with a lead. You go to the bullpens with a lead and it flips.
I mean, you play the old law of averages, but the amount of times it's flip with them, though, it's, you know, bound to not do that. And then, you know, I mean, it's not like they don't have talent in the back. Like the kid that they traded for,
Diaz,
is filthy. And you know, when he had that slider that was, you know, had a late break and away. And I mean, he made Encarnacion look foolish. I mean, he was toying with him in the ninth inning and he looked really good. So I think when that guy is on, you're going to see a different thing and you'll see a different narrative on what that piece of their bullpen looks like, because, you know, that pitch apparently from what I've been hearing and from what they were talking about in game was, you know, has not been consistent for him. And on that day it was good.
I was just a little annoyed at a few different mistakes the Yankees made in this game. First of all, I believe it was the sixth inning when Aaron Hicks hit that leadoff double off the center field wall. He should have been sitting on third base, not second base. He admired that thing. So if he goes to third base, Didi then hits a ball to the warning track with one out in that inning, and that's a sac fly, and it's a 3-1 lead instead of a 2-1 lead. Right. So that's just a little thing that annoyed me. And then, let's be honest, Encarnacion should have picked that ball from LeMahieu. That throw was not that bad of a throw. It was an easy
backhand short hop.
It was a hop throw, but it was one of those hop throws that's almost easy. That's easy to catch. That's like almost by design how he threw it.
Yeah, because it was LeMahieu threw. So it was obviously
LeMahieu never does anything by mistake. Everything he does is on purpose.
It's not his fault, and it's definitely not his fault. No, but that's one of those like nice Sunday hops where you should be able to scoop that up. So, yeah, you know, but at the same time, you're looking at this Encarnacion playing defense, and we all knew that he was, you know, he's been playing average defense. He's not a bad defender, but do you expect him to make all the plays? I don't. I certainly do not. So, you know, it is what it is. The bottom line is they should have scored more runs, but they didn't, and Paxton was good, so they lost the game. I really wasn't that crazy about it because it was the Mets. I think it just escalated things for everybody else.
No, I mean, you can't be too upset. They have the best.
They've won 13 of 14.
Encarnacion at defense, he's going to be playing first base, I think. I think Boone said LeMahieu and Encarnacion are going to shift at first base while Voit is on the injured list. Voit and Encarnacion are very comparable defensively at first base.
Yeah, probably. I'd say Voit has more athleticism, just because he's a little bit more of a younger guy and can move around a little bit better, but it's not much. It's similar.
It's hard to put too much stock into like advanced metrics like DRS and UZR. At this
I don't believe any of that shit anymore.
Okay, fair. But the defensive metrics on Encarnacion are actually better than Luke Voit. That could be a fluke up until end of June in a baseball season, because Encarnacion has been pretty much a DH. In his career for the last like 5 years up until this year, the Mariners had him playing first base and he was fine. He's average, just like Luke Voit is average, maybe slightly below average.
when we're talking about all these advanced metrics on the defensive side, I really, really, really have a hard time taking them with any level of sincerity, any level of seriousness, and any kind of, you know, real measure of evaluation for these guys. Because when I'm watching Gio Urshela make these unbelievable plays, I see this guy is a phenomenal defender. I know that. I can see his glove work. I can see the way he throws. I know what he does. I know he's a good third baseman. I know it in my heart and in my eyes. And when these nerds are coming out and telling me that he's not, that he's on the bottom half of the of the American League third baseman, then I'm looking at you like you're insane. Because obviously you found the glitch in the matrix where your little nerd stats are going off the on a rampage and finding these weird spots that it's going to tell me that he's a bad defender. It's like the framing rate with Gary Sanchez. When I'm watching what's happening in that London game, when Angel Hernandez, who is clearly not calling balls that were strikes, he's calling them balls. Okay, so now I have to rely on Angel Hernandez, the Angel Hernandezes of the world, to call strikes when they're strikes. And then it's going to reflect on Gary Sanchez whether he's framing the ball well or not. You know, the decision of a 65-year-old man behind the plate with a mask on.
I agree with you largely. So I think overall, would you say that I use the advanced metrics, or I enjoy the advanced metrics more than you do?
Oh God, yes. But to be fair, the way that you use them, I think, is supportive rather than like decision based.
Definitely. And if I see something that, you know what I use it for? I use it to verify what my eyes are telling me.
Right.
So and in this case with Gio Urshela, it's not going to verify it, but you can disregard it because you're watching him. Like, he made three.
But isn't that a problem? Isn't that a problem? Because we're looking for confirmation bias, whether it's one way or the other.
Well,
I think
defensive and offensive metrics are, I think they're just different. Offensive metrics you can put more stock into than defensive metrics. I think there's a lot more data. There's a lot more data certainty in the offensive metrics because it's a lot of it is result oriented bases versus judgment. And versus like comparing to other third basemen, who did the other third baseman get to a similar ball or not? Or yes, that was a home run or not a home run.
Where were they playing? Where were they shifted? Where were the umpires positioned? What was the position in the game? What was the weather like? There's so many things that can go into it that are not fact-based. And that's the thing. When you're looking at data and you're looking at, you know, at research and you're trying to, you know, make your own judgments on what is sensical, what makes sense in the game of baseball that you can apply to it, all this different math, all these different equations you have, I think you have to look at the sample and what does that sample look like? Because your research and your study is only as good as your sample. So if you have a sample that has, and you're talking about defensive metrics, and you have all these other things that go into play, another guy's decision, literally, like for the framing, like you're deciding what that catcher is doing, but also within that decision, you have to assume that the guy behind them was doing the right thing as well. So there's just too many factors into it for me to really to take it with any kind of certainty or really any kind of a level of importance. Because to me, when I'm watching guys play defense, I can tell who can glove it, who can throw it, and if they're not doing it, like we're watching Miguel Andujar in 2018 play defense, you can clearly tell what his issues were. I mean, with your eyes. I don't need anybody on the defensive metrics nerd side to tell me what his issues were. I know he's not good. I know his footwork is dog shit or was dog shit. I know that he was throwing at different angles and it was coming out of his hand in different ways and he had no control over it.
And he was double clutching on balls he shouldn't have been double clutching on. The Yankees turned the least amount of double plays from third base last year.
That's not a metric though. That's just a fact.
No, right. Whatever you want to call it, they turned the least amount of double plays that started at third base last year. The last time I looked, they were in the top 12 this year in Major League Baseball. So they went from last to upper half, which it's a clear difference in the defense, especially the infield defense this year.
Oh God, yes. I mean, it's very clear. Well, and also I think it's. I mean, right now we're probably at peak defense because LeMahieu now can be all over the place. He's not. you know, he doesn't have to go to second base all the time. Glaber can go back to second base.
Glaber also made great plays at this short series at second.
No, I know, but I do think that Glaber, even though he's a natural shortstop, I think he's better suited for second base.
Well,
range wise.
Yes, that's true. I think what we saw in the first half with Glaber at shortstop is his instincts are still at shortstop.
Okay, that's fair, but I think
that's going to get better at second base as he plays more second base, and I think that's why the Yankees long-term think he's a second baseman. And also, if you're just comparing him to Didi Gregorius, it's not a fair comparison at shortstop. Didi is a better shortstop all around than Glaber. Better arm, better range, better everything at shortstop. That's not a knock on Glaber. That's just saying Didi is a great shortstop.
Yeah, no, there's absolutely. I mean, he's just a more athletic guy over there that can move around more easily. And whereas Glaber's, you know, he's got a frame on him, and that frame is going to get probably bigger as he gets older and gets into his career. I mean, we're seeing the offense that he could put up and the type of numbers that he's putting up.
Not good enough to make the All-Star team.
Apparently.
You hear what Aaron Boone said after the game last night?
Yeah, I saw that. I don't remember the exact quote, but it was
a joke. He was like, this is a joke.
Yeah, mocking it, yeah. No, it is. It is a joke, but you look at the numbers of the guys that are there, they're all pretty damn close.
Yeah, and Glaber was an All-Star last year, and he didn't get to play in the game because that was when he was injured.
Right.
So he would have been able to play in the game this year, so I think he probably really wanted to be there to play in the game, but he'll make another All-Star team in his career. Like, I'm not worried about it. I can only get so mad over an All-Star snub.
Yeah, I mean, he'll probably slide into this one, too. At some point, because if I feel like in these All-Star games now, the guys go down at the last minute,
or guys back out because
there's a lingering something.
Yeah, I got a little bit of a hamstring. I want to deal. I want to go to the Bahamas for 3 days. I don't want to go to Cleveland.
Yeah, exactly. Any you see some of the guys that maybe have been there a few times, they're like, like my wife has ticket. She already booked this trip.
Yeah,
wasn't really expecting me to do that well this year.
Yeah, she had no confidence in me. Well, how did we get on Glaber? We were talking about advanced metrics. I don't know. I think just the bottom line is with a small sample size with defense, whether it's Gio Urshela or the framing stuff with Gary Sanchez, look at what your eyes are telling you. If you're watching every baseball game or close to every baseball game, you know Gary Sanchez has been a force behind the plate this year.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, what is the small sample size? That's the problem, I think. When people are looking at this for the first time, they're like, okay, I have half of a season's data. That should be enough to
it's
tell
not
me
enough with
a
defense.
Story. Well, then that's a problem too, because, you know,
well,
it should.
But that's admitted. The advanced metrics nerds admit that defense is takes a long time. Use ER.
So then stop
even
using
takes
it. So then stop using
data.
It. So then they should stop using it.
The article when was that article published on Gary Sanchez? Like May? Like mid May? Maybe
it was like four shows ago, four or five shows ago. No, maybe more than that.
Whatever it was,
it was about a month ago, I'd say.
Okay, so say there were 2 months of framing stats for Gary Sanchez.
Yeah.
And even that's it's not really enough.
But that's the problem.
The article was written because clicks.
Well, right. But to me, when you're looking at that, and maybe you're not getting the guys that are dissecting it enough, and you're just seeing these things that they want to see, like, oh, a Yankee's not as good as everybody thinks they are. Awesome. I love this article.
Right.
But when you're using it,
you get people to talk about it in an angry way.
Yeah, but they don't care about the Yankees hate. I feel like the other side of it's just way heavier and way more clicks than the negative, the people firing back from the Yankee side. But the thing is, if you are a professional and you want these advanced metrics to go out in the world and live there for a long time and grow and be this thing, if you're a nerd that is aspiring to lead more nerds into the future and get more statistician jobs in the nerd field for baseball, then you know what? You should probably stop using half season defensive metrics if the sample size isn't big enough and the story is skewed, because that's what it seems to be. And to me, that's an issue when we're trying to talk about it, because it doesn't really make sense.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Paxton. So he definitely looked better. I feel like he's been on a seesaw all season.
That was a lazy transition. I just got to call you out because I talked about Paxton like 20 minutes ago.
Okay. Well, then we already just covered.
We already covered Paxton. No, I'm just telling you, it was a lazy transition. It was one that you tried. It was like a frame. Have you seen that the little league kid where he catches the ball like above his head and then tries to frame it and bring it back? You seen that video? Yeah. That's what that was.
It's a holiday. We're recording early in the morning. I'm looking at a beautiful view right now I'm going to have some lazy transitions, and I think the people can understand. They might be listening to this.
It's a little selfish because we'd like to see that view.
Yeah, well, you're going to look at me instead. people are going to be listening to this maybe at a barbecue, on the beach. Yeah. The Yankees are playing at, I believe, 5 o'clock in the afternoon this morning, so you got plenty of time to listen
to
this
before. Weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird time.
Well, it's the 4th of July. They want to get the extra 30 people in the trop for 5 p.m.
Then. I'm going down there tonight, too. Like, I'm on my way. I'm heading down that way, so I'm going to miss a lot of the game because of their weird time. Just another thing for the trop. Just another thing for the trap. And Colleen is already down there, by the way. Is driven by it. Says it also looks ugly. Looks like a dump from the outside.
So the Paxton start, though, it was an improved start. And the last time out, he went out against the Mets. He couldn't get out of the second inning at Yankee Stadium. He threw over 100 pitches in 6 innings. This is problem, though. His pitch count seems to climb and climb and climb rapidly in these games. He throws. It's whether it's deep counts. He had only 2 walks in this game, but his walk rate is up this year. He gets a lot of foul balls. So
he wasn't putting people away. That's it. Like the swing and miss, the out pitch wasn't there.
Yeah.
But he was able to work through it and get those ground balls. Like you mentioned, the 2 big double plays, like
huge,
that phenomenal play by Glaber with the backhand to Didi, who just threw a seed over to first base. It was gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
It was gorgeous. It was really funny because this 2-game set, Glaber's like, oh, I'm not an all-star, huh?
Yeah.
Well, let me show you what my defense looks like, and let me show you what my offense looks like. And he came out to play because he was really good.
Well, so Paxton's actually going to get one more start before the all-star break. He needs to start putting consecutive starts together because I feel like every time he turns a corner, then he reverts and he has a bad outing and we're saying, okay, what the hell happened with James Paxton?
Yeah, no, that's the thing. Like we need to see consistency from this guy. And I think, he's been healthy enough. He's been healthy now long enough, I think, to be getting into some kind of a good groove or, you know, a good feel with your mechanics. Like all these things should be clicking at this point. And he should start building upon it. So I'm not really concerned about the high pitch count at this point because, like to me, that was an outing where maybe your stuff isn't the greatest, but you're still going in there throwing 6 innings, and getting out of the jams that you need to, getting those ground balls at the times you need it. Like to me, that's very important. And I would have loved to see them win a 2-1 game after that whole London thing. I said this in our Facebook group on the thread that we have for every game. Like that to me would have been a really good sign for this team because something that we haven't really seen much of lately is this bullpen be dominant. But also win those 2-1, those close games where you expect them and need them to be dominant. Because, I mean, while they've been good, we haven't really seen that lockdown end of the bullpen besides Chapman that we've been expecting. I mean, there's been a lot of runners on base every inning, it seems like, even with the times when they're good. And Ottavino, we talked about, you know, if he had a bad outing because he couldn't grip it or whatever. Like, what are you talking about? Just grip the goddamn ball. That's your job. It's the ball. Grip the ball. Pitch the ball. I don't want to hear that shit that you can't grip it. I really don't. I hate that excuse. I really do because it's that there's nothing different. Like, okay, there are elements. Yes, there are elements every night you go out to take the ball. Guess what? It's going to be hot and sweaty for the rest of the summer. So you better learn how to grip a ball when it's a little bit slick. I just don't buy that. The thing is that he's been having problems throwing strikes all year.
Yeah. No, he's been
falls behind in the count.
He's been otherworldly at stranding runners. His escape rates are off the charts. So he puts up a lot of zeros in innings, but it's still 1 or 2 base runners in those innings.
Yeah.
And you're gonna eventually get burned. You put
and
base runners on, you're eventually gonna give up hits like he did, and you're gonna get burned.
So the thing is, when we're looking at these two guys that I'm talking about, Ottavino and Britton, both guys struggling with throwing strikes. Like that's clearly one of the issues is they're not around the strike zone as much. Whatever the issue is, just looking at the end result, not throwing strikes, not around, not working ahead in the count. And when you're not working ahead in the count and you're throwing those frisbees to get back over the plate, they're just not as effective. And you're trying to get that extra bite on them to be more cute so that they're not completely over the plate and you leave one over. And Britton, that's the other thing. Like Britton's sinker is like starting too high in the goddamn zone. Like the amount of times he's thrown that thing up and you're still getting that sink action, but it's up and a bat can still get underneath it and elevate the ball a little bit. He's still running into that problem. We're not seeing that same guy. Like this, he needs to live down in the zone. And I know he's still getting a lot of ground balls.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I believe I saw a stat when he came in the game the other night that he leads ground ball rate, highest ground ball rate.
But the problem is that when he's not, when he's missing, he's leaving that ball up in the zone and it's hittable.
And there's two runners on base.
And there's damage. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, maybe we're nitpicking at the bullpen, but if there's one area that needs to be perfect on this team, it's the back end of the bullpen, because that's how this team was designed. That's how Brian Cashman designed this team. He spent a shit ton of money to build a dominant back end of the bullpen so his starters don't have to go seven innings, because they can't go seven innings. They're not designed to go seven innings. They're designed to go 5 to 6 innings and then let the bullpen shut the door.
There are guys, Paxton and Tanaka should be going into the seventh inning. Like, there's no reason why they
should,
can't go into the
should.
I'm saying they're, you say they're not built for it. They're certainly built for it. Well, these guys can go deep into account.
Tanaka, barring like two starts this year, we have not seen it from either of those guys.
No, but my point is that they should be. Like, it's not like they're a 5-inning to 6-inning pitcher. These guys, when you see them on paper, they should be going deeper than that.
Yeah.
They're that type of pitcher.
Tanaka's inconsistent with it, where he had like a complete game outing against the Rays a couple weeks ago, and then he loses it in some games. But that, I feel like that's, we know what, we've seen enough Tanaka now. We know what Tanaka is.
Yeah.
And Paxton, we're still waiting to see what he really is. He has not put it together yet. And we don't know if Severino's coming back this year.
Right. It seems like it's becoming more and more like a, more far-fetched, but
like everyone's still saying, oh, when this team gets Severino back, when this team gets, okay, we're in July now and he's still not throwing off a mound. Yeah. So,
well, and he just had a
setback. Yeah. So, what are we talking about here? 2 months ago, it was, oh, we're going to see him back after the All-Star break. Well, the All-Star break is next week, and he has not thrown a pitch off a mound yet. So when are we going to see him? August? Is it going to be September? You're going to bring him back like late August, and he's going to have a month before the playoffs. That could be great. That could be a great thing.
That could be, honestly, like, if this team is still trucking along and they have a nice little cushion in the AL East, and that's the case, like, not a bad scenario when you have your guy fully healthy for the last month of the season.
But on the flip side, what if he comes back and he's not good and he's hurt still, or he never can come back?
Well, I don't think they'll bring him back when he's hurt still. So
yeah, and we know the rotation is going to look different by the time August rolls around because of the trade deadline. But we don't know who that pitcher they're going to acquire is, and we don't know how that pitcher is going to pitch.
Right. We don't know how they're going to pitch.
Herman came back. That's a positive thing.
That's
came
a very
back,
good thing.
Came back, dude, off the IL.
I love seeing it because he's one of my favorite guys to watch pitch. So it's good to see. I don't like calling him Mingo though. I'm not on board with it.
Why?
I don't know. It just doesn't seem right.
I know.
It doesn't feel good to me.
I got you. I put it in the post game tweet.
I saw yesterday.
Yeah. And I tweeted out. I was like,
I cringed a little bit when I saw it. I was like,
His teammates call him that, so I think I'm good, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He was out since June 7th. His last outing was in Cleveland. First pitch, home run to McNeil. It's like, oh boy, here we go. But
did you get that feeling? Because I didn't get that feeling. I was like, oh, McNeil just jumped on a fastball, because of course he's going to get a fastball with this guy coming back. First start, like, if you're ever going to see a fastball in your life, it's going to be right now.
Well, I was just... No, yeah, I kind of got the feeling. Yes, I got the feeling. Whenever a guy comes back and his first pitch leaves the yard, that's not good. I don't like to see that. It's not what you want, Scott. That is not what you want.
I looked at it and I was like, all right, whatever.
Well, he really settled in.
It was a fastball down the gut because he wanted to get the first one out of the way.
On the pregame, Boone said 70 to 80 pitches for him anyway, and he ended up going exactly 80 pitches in 6 innings.
Yeah, and he looked really good. I thought he looked very good. I mean, obviously, place you circle was the first pitch of the game, so whatever, you like go away first pitch of the game. It didn't happen in my mind. And when you're seeing the way he battled through that game and pitched, I was very, very happy to see that, because he looked strong, he looked good mechanically, he was efficient. 6 innings, 80 pitches, right? So
yeah,
that was good stuff, man. Like, that's everything you wanted to see. I think we saw.
The question is, how deep does he go in the season? How much do they let him go, innings-wise?
Yeah. Right now, I'm not concerned about that. I think they will, Boone has talked about the fact that they have all their starters back, so they're not going to use this opener situation. But they're going to be pulling Herman from these games in probably, you know, 5-6 innings. You're just not going to see him go crazy deep in there. And
would you rather them do that, or would you rather them limit his innings that way and get him out of a game when he might be struggling and you're not going to let him push through it, or the Yankees have a big lead? I remember they did that in Baltimore. He only pitched 5 innings because the Yankees had like a 9-run lead, and
yeah,
they were just like, all right, you're out of the game. Or would you rather them push him every third start, meaning like bump him and use an opener or something? Because the opener, as much as we shit on it, it has worked for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's an element of luck to that as well, just because of the way that the games have gone. But because what happens after the opener, like, is
well,
in the
Nestor
wind.
Cortes has been pitching well, and I don't know how much you want to rely on Nestor Cortes, but
yeah. So no, I want him getting consistent starts. Right. I want them to be dictating what he does by the game, because if that's the case, you have a couple situations here. You you're getting your guy back into the flow of going out there every 5 days, and I think that's important when you're trying to build up a starting pitcher, and that's important when you're looking at him for his career too, right? Like this is a season where he's probably gonna throw the most innings he's thrown, and they want him to ramp up, and if he's going to be a fixture in this rotation, if he's a guy that's going to be a piece for a long time, they need that to develop. It's not like you could just sit him and like expect his arm to get used to something by doing, you know, not what he's going to do in the future. I think you get him going, you get him into the rhythm where he's going out every 5 days, and if he's at a pitch count in the fourth, fifth inning, and you need to take him out, then bam, you have your option at that point to dip into the bullpen. Maybe you have a big lead. Maybe the situation plays where it doesn't matter.
Well, I think the hip thing was as much about fatigue as it was his hip.
Well, I think fatigue can cause injury, so yeah.
And other than Herman, it was really the Gio Urshela show last night. He hit the home run, had a little nice, he was clenching his glutes on the way around the bases to keep something in, and he made 3 unbelievable plays at third base.
Yeah, and he's a terrible defensive third baseman, man. We're really struggling over there. Ever since Andujar has been out, we've been struggling at third base defensively. I don't know what the problem is.
Yeah, even though Andujar had all those errors, you know.
Yeah, I mean, errors.
Fielding, what is an error percentage?
What is an error?
But when I saw Urshela, so I saw him hit the home run, then I looked down, and I looked up, and he was like rounding third base, like barely running. And I'm like, what the hell happened? I thought,
yeah.
I thought maybe like, did he turn an ankle running around like first or second base, and I just missed it? And then I heard the announcers saying, oh, it looked like Urshela may have tweaked something. And I'm like, oh God, here we go. Just like one after the other, after the other. They got, it's like, okay, remember we talked about the IL sacrifice?
Yeah,
they get a guy back. Someone has to go down. They get Herman back. Is it going to be Urshela that goes down?
No, it was Voit. Voit was that's the sacrificial true. Lamb. So that's why this one didn't happen. That's why this one was okay, because we all thought it was, but it was, you know, it already happened. That sacrifice already happened. But yeah, I think he just had to take a big dump, and it came and it hit him halfway between first and second. He's like, oh my God, oh my, I gotta be very upright right now. Like,
yep.
We've all been in this situation. I've definitely been in this situation, and you're like, you know, you got to walk a little bit more like calculated with your steps. You're definitely upright because you're clenching everything possible. And he's in front of a lot of people. There's a lot of people watching, like a packed Citi Field. You know, the Mets fans are just waiting for a Yankee player to shit themselves on the field. Like that is their World Series. You want to talk about the Yankees Mets? No. A Yankee shitting themselves, rounding the bases. That is their World Series championship.
So you know how marathon runners towards the end, they get to like mile 24 and then they just let it go. They just shit themselves. And like that's yeah. That's applauded in marathon running. I don't think it would be applauded in baseball.
No, it definitely would not be applauded. Well, it might be on if you're at Citi Field and there's Mets fans watching. But no, it's look, I'm glad
would
that
they rename it Shitty Field.
I'm glad that the
A-Rod that's just calling it Shitty Field. You wouldn't know what he's saying.
Is he just saying
Citi Field? God, I'm a child.
He does call it Shitty Field, though. It's a good thing he wasn't on the broadcast last night. They did have an ESPN broadcast last night, and it was.
I watched the ESPN broadcast last night. Yeah. That team, the Wednesday night team, better than the Sunday night team.
Oh, much better. There's so much more natural. And I like a booth that will joke around and just be loose, and there's nothing loose about having A-Rod and the rest of them
Mendoza
and Vasgersian up there. Yeah. It's like the tightest, most awkward booth you could possibly imagine, where these guys are all just joking around each other and you can tell that they like each other and they like get along. Anyway, yeah, I'm glad the bowel movement didn't happen on field. I'm glad he got rid of that.
He went to the tunnel and took care of it. Yeah, Boone thought he was going to have to come out of the game because you saw him talking to the ump and then he saw Urshela run out to the field. And maybe, who knows what it was? It could have just been a calf cramp. You know, you get a Charlie horse or something like that. You never know what happens, or he literally could have had to take a dump. But I've always thought about that. Like, if you're out in like right field, right, and the pitcher just cannot get a friggin' out, but you're just out there because you're pinching it. You're just pinching it, trying to keep it in. Like, that's got to happen pretty frequently, right?
I gotta tell you, like, the amount of time that I've played, like, any kind of sport, it's never been a problem where you got to go to the bathroom. Like, not as much as like a number two, like. I feel like that thing just gets vacuumed up there when you start playing sports. You know what I mean? Like, you might have to take a piss.
About how often you
might be,
because you're
drinking
sports,
a lot of water, and you know. But on a hot day when you're sweating everything out, like, even that's
law of averages, though. Like, they play every day. You don't play a sport every day.
Yeah, but they also have a lot of time to do what they need to do. It's not like there aren't that many breaks. There's a ton of breaks.
Yeah, but 2 minutes isn't exactly. You can't take your time in there.
No, but again, like, I think that just gets sealed up. Like, you guys, I have everybody has a routine. You know what I'm saying?
You think anyone's like, ever?
The only person that I could see doing that. Actually, no, I'm not even going to bring this up. Never mind. I'm not even going.
You think anyone's ever been pulled from a game because they like say they made the last out of the previous inning, and then they go in and they go in to take a dump, and it's just taking forever,
taking too long. Oh,
and
yeah,
they bat
for sure.
Around. And they come up again, or they have to go out to the field, and they're not there, and then they have to replace them in the game because he's taking a shit.
Probably. Or swiping or liking pictures on Instagram.
Pablo Sandoval, yeah.
Yeah. So there's I guarantee that's happened, but I haven't seen anybody like just all of a sudden pop up in the middle of the base path, like, whoa, there's that.
Voit goes on the IL. MRI revealed a little bit of a strain. So Boone, after the Sunday game or after the Saturday game, when Voit hurt himself, said Voit's going to do on-field activities on Sunday. We're going to see how he is. He did those on-field activities. He could hit, but they just kept him out for precautionary reasons. And Boone said he'll be a player for us on Tuesday. But I guess the MRI revealed a little something extra, and I think it's mostly just playing it safe because the All-Star break is around the corner and you get him a little extra time.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I think that's the case. And I think that they were even talking about it. Like, even if he doesn't feel like it's a bad situation for him, they saw enough where they just want to play it as a precaution. And I think it was retroactive to 6:30. So he should be.
Well, it'd be retroactive to 6:29. That's the last time he played in the game.
Yeah, but I thought I saw 6:30. Either way, I don't believe anybody. That's like the stance that I'm taking, and I firmly believe that I don't believe anybody. But I am hoping it does feel like that situation is that this whole Voit to the IL thing does seem precautionary and convenient all at the same time because of the All-Star break and what's happening.
Mike Ford got the call up, and Morrison asked for his unconditional release. So the Logan Morrison Yankees era is officially over. We will not see him and Gary Sanchez have fisticuffs in the dugout.
It never really happened, right? Like, no. We will never remember that.
No.
Because, I mean, he didn't sniff the major leagues, which is good because we didn't want him here. And
well, they signed him at a time when literally every night someone was getting injured.
Yeah, no, it was clearly a worst case scenario. We need a guy to play defense at first base signing.
Yeah.
And really hoping that we don't have to bring him up and pay him anything.
Right.
They were looking towards the day of his opt out and the unconditional release. They were like, that's a celebratory day. If we can get through that and he opts out, good things are happening.
And it's not just Voit who's on the IL. So we got both announcers, the radio voice of the Yankees, John Sterling, and the TV voice of the Yankees, Michael Kay, will be missing some time. Sterling, I actually, when I saw this news, I was shocked. So John Sterling is turning 81 today, as we're recording, yeah. July 4th. It's the first time he's missing a game in 30 years of calling games. He hasn't missed a single game. And I was reading an article about him, and they said
since
he's called
1989, I think, right?
He missed a game in 1989. So he started in 1989, and he missed a game that season. He attended a funeral that season. But since then, he's not missed a single game. And since it's been him and Susan Waldman that took over, because Charlie Steiner used to do the games with him, and they used to alternate innings like most radio broadcast teams do. John Sterling has called every inning since 2004, which is also unusual. So he's done more baseball, called more baseball than almost anyone in history.
Yeah, it's wild, man. Like that streak, I think a lot of people, unless you're you know, keen to the Yankees and really paying attention, realized that streak was happening, because it wasn't really talked about very much, not in mainstream at least. But he definitely got a lot of national attention, I think, once he acknowledged that he was going to take some time off. And you know, it's kind of crazy, like the whole fact that, look, the man deserves a time off. He's getting older. He needs to take care of himself. If I'm being honest, he doesn't look great.
He doesn't sound the
same
either.
He sounds a little different. So I think it's, you know, I don't know what his deal is.
They said he lost a ton of weight this year.
I mean, you can tell. You can look at him. And do you remember a couple of years ago when we saw him outside spring training? We were like, man, he looked really thin.
You said, and then he puts some of that weight on. John Sterling. And I kind of caught a side glimpse of him. I'm like, that guy's 130 pounds. There's no way that's John Sterling. But it was.
Yeah, it was. And then he added weight again after that. And it's like he's...
So that was 2 years ago we saw him. And then...
Yeah. And now he's getting back to that... you know, and whatever the reasons are, look, I just want him to take care of himself, because we want him around for a very long time. And you know, he's an icon. So,
I saw some assholes step away. Like, good, he stinks. It's the worst radio broadcast in baseball.
Bottom line is, if you like them or don't like them, the timing of talking about the fact that you don't like them is not the one where they're leaving for medical reasons, or the fact that they've literally gone 30 years without missing a game. Like, how about you just look at that side of it? I don't care if you like them or not. How about you acknowledge the freaking...
He basically hasn't missed a game.
If he was an NFL draft, he would be labeled with stick-to-itiveness, because that is unbelievable.
The most underrated stat is games played, or in this case, games called.
Yeah. So that... But, you know, one of the crazy things, and the other half of this, is that Michael Kay now... is also, we got both broadcasters now going to the IL, if you will.
So have they said, because Ruka was supposed to fill in for Sterling.
Which I'm surprised, actually. I really thought that Sweeney Murray was going to get the opportunity to take that
Sweeney's
job.
Not a play-by-play guy. Sweeney's more of a color guy.
Sweeney can be a play-by-play guy. I think
maybe.
Sweeney...
But is he... So who's going to do the...
And Sweeney
Tampa...
has an incredible rapport with Waldman. I mean, he's been doing the post-game. He's working with Susan Waldman quite often. Like, the three of them are always together.
Sweeney's great. But let's not say he's got the same chemistry as John and Susan. Like,
I'm not saying the same chemistry, but I'm saying that there is a chemistry there, and that they have... And that he's been with WFAN forever. So... I don't know. Just kind of felt like he was the next one up. Well, he did the play-by-play with Susan for Old Timers Day. I was listening to it in the car.
Yeah, and afterwards he said, this is why I'm not a play-by-play guy, because he botched a few things.
Well, I mean, it's impossible to see.
He forgot who was in center field.
Yeah, because you had an old man running around.
Jeff
you can't
Nelson
tell who the hell is
center field. He's like,
numbers don't mean anything at that point.
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. The Michael Kay thing is obviously he's got some health issue that we don't really know about. I know he was dealing with laryngitis a couple of weeks ago, and then he's taking time off from his radio show and calling the games for about a month. Yeah. He's having surgery on his vocal cords.
I think today or yesterday even.
I know Michael Kay is also a polarizing figure for Yankees.
Kay is good at his job, though. They're both very good at their jobs.
Yeah, a lot of people aren't the biggest Michael Kay fans, and that's fine. I wouldn't say I'm the biggest Michael Kay fan, but I certainly can appreciate... Because when I listen to other broadcasts, I think you appreciate Michael Kay for what he is.
Look, when you're listening to a game or you're watching a game and you hear guys that are talking in your ear every single day, you're going to have some sort of feeling, whether it's that's your type of guy or not. So that just goes with the territory when you're talking about a broadcaster. I think it's a personal flavor. You either like it or you don't. It is what it is. That doesn't mean anything to the way that they do their job and how professional they are and how courteous they are. So I can't say enough good things about both of those guys. I think they're both phenomenal at what they do. It's kind of crazy that they're doing this, because when I first started listening to Yankee games, when it was when I was a kid, back when I was listening to it on my like alarm radio, back on 770 CBS, ABC, I don't remember. I think it was CBS, and it was Michael Kay and John Sterling doing the games.
Yeah, on the
together.
Radio, yeah.
So the fact that they're both like going out like with this, it's just a weird timing. Sterling's just missing
the weekend. He's just taking the weekend off, and he's going to have the All-Star break. He's kind of pulling like a Luke Voit, where you just get him out before the All-Star
break. He sees an opportunity for some more days off, and it's a good time to do it. Yeah,
yeah, and I could see him starting to scale back road trips anyway.
Yes.
And just doing home games. I read a story by Wally Matthews. It was actually a really good article about John Sterling. He's been taking car services to the games because he's not healthy enough to drive himself.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, look, man, he's getting up there in age.
He just went to London. He's got that jet lag's really got to hit an 81-year-old, like,
for sure.
That's bad. And he's just got to be tired of plane trips, like flying to Tampa. First of all, he hates the Trop more than anyone. He can't stand the noise. It's too loud for him.
I love the fact that he's leaving at the Trop. Like, I'm not going to that piece
screw
of
this.
Shit. Like, I'm too
I'll
old
come
for
back
going
after
that.
The All-Star break.
I'm way too old to go to that dump. So maybe he just takes the Trop out of the road trips. Like, that would be a nice little pullout.
There's eight, nine games a year. He's not. Yeah. But I love John Sterling. I understand he's not the most accurate play-by-play guy. I think he misses a lot of stuff. He gets too excited. He calls a lot of home runs that aren't really home runs. But he's entertaining, and baseball is entertaining. I think that's what people miss a lot of times, is that sports are not that serious, okay? Like, your play-by-play guy can get goofy and make up home run calls, because we're not talking about life or death here. We're not talking about politics. We're talking about friggin' baseball. So put the game on, have a beer, and enjoy it. Have a grilled hot dog, not a boiled hot dog, because those are freaking disgusting, and enjoy the goddamn game.
All right. The hot dog thing. Do you not like stadium hot dogs? Do you not like when you go on the, when you're in New York, you don't like the carts. You won't eat a hot dog from a cart.
No.
Because those are all boiled hot dogs.
No, I know they are.
A stadium hot dog is a boiled hot dog.
I know they are.
I think when people hear boiled,
they're heated up on the grill. I understand that.
But when people hear boiled, it's like they get a negative connotation to it. But in fact, all hot dogs are boiled.
So yes, I understand that. I will eat a stadium hot dog. But it is not my preferred hot dog. I'd much rather grill a hot dog and have it be burnt on the outside, have spicy brown mustard and some relish. That is how I prefer my hot dogs. Those taste way better to me.
Okay. I guess I do like certain foods because of nostalgia, I think. And when I'm at home and I'm cooking my dogs and they're sitting in some water that they've been sitting in for a long time and like
hot
stewing around
juice.
In there. And then I get the hot dog out of the water with the tongs. Like, I like that feeling of putting it in there and then I go a little bit of ketchup. I like the ketchup.
Oh, see, people aren't going to like that. People get very serious about ketchup on hot dogs. They say that's a child move.
I dot the ketchup. I just want a little bit of taste.
So like every four dots?
Whatever it is, I dot it. I don't put a lot on. I put a very little bit amount. I put a ton of spicy brown mustard on. I put a ton of relish on, and I'll go kraut too.
Jeez, how do you even taste the hot dog?
Doesn't matter. It's all part
of
the experience.
Do you do toasted buns? If you were to prefer toasted buns or not toasted?
If I'm eating a hamburger, I want a toasted bun. If I'm eating a hot dog, I don't want a toasted bun. Again, nostalgia. Okay. It's like one of the. I don't ever eat a hamburger at a ballpark.
Do you?
I rarely do
as well. I know the Yankees.
Because I can't get a medium rare hamburger at a ballpark.
Yeah, you're going to get basically a boiled hamburger, which is the most vile thing on earth.
Yes.
Do you like the hot dogs with the casing where you get that snap?
Oh, love it.
Ugh. See, that makes me want to throw up in my mouth.
Don't do that. It's delicious. I think that's like when I get that snap, it's the best part. That's a good sausage.
You're
good
gross.
Hot dog. Good casing.
So we're bringing a segment back. It's called What Awesome Thing Did Aaron Judge Do This Week? We did it before he went on the injured list, and then we kind of forgot when he came back. So what has Aaron Judge done the last couple weeks that is just awesome? Because even when he's not hitting home runs, he's still doing something awesome.
So a couple things. Well, one, I mean, he was an ambassador for the world for baseball. I mean, that's pretty awesome. Literally the guy that you parade out there to be the guy to be your spokesperson for baseball in Europe, Aaron Judge. And when you're looking at the ideal candidate for that, you know, Aaron Judge, literally like a sculpture coming out,
larger than life figure.
Might as well be like a Greek god coming out of there with a baseball cap on and pinstripes. Like, what more could you ask for? He was phenomenal with the media. He played well. He was good with the fans. Like, everything you could ask for in a guy that is going to represent your sport and your organization, Aaron Judge.
I think that's a good thing. And in fairness, he hasn't had a ton of games, but in London, he showed up. He had a home run on the biggest stage. Yeah. And we talked about that last episode, how he had extra juice running around the bases.
Yep.
If you guys look on Twitter, Facebook, wherever, we put out a video clip from the show, and I found the home run he hit against the Twins in the wild card game a couple years ago. He had that same kind of smile and same kind of point rounding the bases.
In the beginning, not rounding third base, looking into the stands and pointing into the stands.
But when Aaron Judge normally hits a home run on June 29th, if that was in Yankee Stadium or in Fenway
Park.
Head
down, business.
Head down, just blank look on his face. Like, I'm going to go out to right field and catch the ball and throw someone out, and then I'm going to go hit another home run. And it's not, so it was different.
It was different.
I think it's cool that it was different to these players. Upcoming game, so the Yankees are going to the Trop. You're going to be down there for the Bronx Pinstripes invasion. So they announced the rotation. Hap is pitching today on July 4th, Thursday. He's on 11 days rest. Friday is Tanaka. You're going to get Sabathia on Saturday. He'll be on 12 days rest.
Dude, I feel like CC pitches every single game that I go to.
He does throw a lot, yeah. But he usually shows up.
When, you know, at the Trop, you know.
Well, he usually shows up at home. He pitches well at home, as we've talked about.
But we've also gotten some fireworks with CC at the Trop, so maybe we get some good fireworks going.
And then Paxton will round out the rotation on Sunday before they hit the All-Star break. So Herman is getting one start before the All-Star break. He'll have extra time off. And it wouldn't surprise me if they extend Herman to the back of the rotation when they come back again, just to get him more time.
Well, because CeCe's going to need more time, too. I mean, you're talking about a 12 days rest here, so they're going to give CeCe more time as well. So it'll be interesting to see how they do this. At the end of the day, like, having Chad Green back in the bullpen in a more regular role is a very, very good thing, in my opinion. If you can have these guys starting and you don't have to use that opener, now you're using Chad Green, who's effective in high leverage situations where you don't have to use Ottavino and Britton every single night.
Two innings on Wednesday night.
Yes.
In the bullpen to bridge to where they could get a little bit more of a lead. They bridge from Paxton, and then they could just, you know, whoever needs to mop up the ninth inning is what they did last night.
But you're not putting as much pressure on these guys in the back now if you add another dominant force. And that's what he can be if he's, you know, fully right. And since he's been back, we've seen really good Chad Green. So I think our bullpen is better, much better now if he is an option later in the game too. So That's a really good sign for me, and I like that. And a quick footnote, and this is could be nothing, could be something, who knows? But I was looking at the box score from Scranton Wilkes-Barre last night, and Ben Heller pitched two innings. One, two innings for Ben Heller is a telling stat for me, because, you know, that's not how he was used in the past. He hasn't really been throwing that much, but he also opened the game. So we're seeing Ben Heller ramp up after, you know, surgery, and he's been climbing the ranks, you know, getting through the Yankees minor league system as a rehab, and they're testing him out in different ways as an opener, going two innings, and he pitched really well. So put up a really good stat line. That's something to watch. You know, maybe it's something, maybe it's nothing, but that's a really another, you know, high potential arm in the bullpen that could help the Yankees second half of the season.
He was on track to make the major leagues like 3 years ago, and just injuries have derailed him. So, yeah. And that's another guy who came over in the Andrew Miller trade from Cleveland.
Yep.
Last thing I want to talk about is Jason Dominguez, but I'm calling him Jason. The Yankees signed. He was the number one, unanimous number one international prospect. They signed him to a minor league deal with a $5.1 million bonus. So it's basically
maxed out
their bonus pool money. I know they can acquire extra money. Cashman loves to acquire extra bonus pool money. We talked about Dominguez. You talked about him with Ben Badler from Baseball America a couple of months ago when we had him on the show. Raved about him. It's like very rare do you get unanimous from all analysts. Like, this guy is the number one prize. He's only 16 years old.
This is like Gary Sanchez all over again. We're going to be hearing Dominguez's name probably way more than we even heard Sanchez.
The reason why, like, Gary Sanchez, you were like, oh, how long is this guy going to be a prospect? Well, they signed him at 16. That's why. It's going to take a long time. We might probably not going to see Jason Dominguez until, like, 2025. But
yeah,
he's going to be young still in 2025.
The thing is, though, he'll be 20, or what year are we in right now?
2019.
So he would be 22 years old. That's wild.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see him. If he is the guy that everybody thinks he is, you're going to see a guy. And the reason I think that he's such a unanimous, high prospect for everybody is physically, he looks much older than 16. Physically, he's like conditioned and,
well, let's hope
bigger,
he's really 16
and built. I mean, I don't really care if he is or not, but he physically looks much different than every other 16-year-old I've ever seen. Yeah. So I think that it puts him a level up for getting, you know, through the minor. So if he is talent wise, the way that they think he is physically, he's more advanced, I think. So I think we could see him, you know, sooner than people would expect.
Talent-wise, I don't think it's a question. They're saying physically he's maxed out already. He's about 5'10". His frame has maxed out, they say. I don't know how they know this at 16. Like,
I don't know either.
I hit growth spurts after 16. I'm not a professional athlete. I understand that. But who's saying he can't grow another couple inches at 17, 18 years old?
Either way, like, more what I'm talking about is, like, when you're physically built out, the coordination skills, like, all those things really start to come out when you're even a little bit older than that, and you really feel your body better. Look, he's going to be – they're going to take care of him with kid gloves in the beginning, because they're going to do a lot of – let's make sure you're – all of your mechanics and everything.
He's not even
clean.
Eligible to play until next year.
Right, but they're down there working with him. He's wearing Yankees gear. He's signed – he's doing showings.
He's like going to start going to him. He's going to start going to all the classes. Teach him about how to speak English, how to communicate, how to order food, how to make food, all that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that are going to happen with him. And I think we all, you know, there are a lot of scouts who probably know him by looking at him. The guys that have physically been down and have been able to watch him play. But there really isn't that much tape on him. There really aren't not that much. There's not a lot of footage on this guy. There's a couple of YouTube videos through a fence that keeps getting brought up. But we're going to see a lot more of him, you know, in a cage, in sweats, and physically we'll see more about this guy, because he's going to be covered. It'll be interesting to watch his development through, but I wouldn't be surprised if he, after a year and a half, like, in the system, and they were sure that all his mechanics and everything was good, I wouldn't be surprised once he starts getting into real game that he flew through, if the talent is what they think it is.
You don't get a nickname the Martian unless you're a freak.
Yeah.
And it's apparently what he is. Talent-wise, is a freak. So I'm excited that they got him. He's now the number one prospect in the Yankee system and number 61 overall in MLB pipeline. So the Yankees, whose farm system has been depleted, not for any poor reason, for acquisitions and for graduating talent. I think mid-season the Yankees were ranked, before this signing, were ranked about 15th overall in Major League Baseball as far as prospect system goes. That's got to be on the up now that they added a guy in the top 100.
I mean, this guy, once he gets into gameplay and shows the type of skills that they all think he can, he's going to be the number one prospect in baseball soon. He's going to be top five.
I don't know that, but he's going to.
If he's that kind of guy, if he's the guy that everybody's describing.
Like when the Red Sox signed Yoan Moncada, he was another one of these can't-miss guys.
And he shot up to number one fast, too.
He did shoot up to number one, yeah.
So that's the thing. Like, when you see a 16-year-old and he shows any kind of ability, he's going to fly up those rankings.
16. That is freaking crazy. He was born in, I don't know exactly when he was born, but like 2003, 2004 time frame. Like, God. Anyway, this episode is not over, not even close to over. You had Keith from George's Box on to recap all the stuff that went on in London. JJ, you know, he talks about how everyone missed the London games and that they should feel bad about themselves, that they're not real Yankee fans. Well, he's just gallivanting around Italy right now, not even paying attention to Yankees baseball. So I haven't missed a game yet. I'm on vacation, too. I'm watching all these games. I'm recording podcasts. He is MIA. Keith is not MIA. What'd you talk to Keith about?
Yeah, I mean, I understand JJ's sentiment, because I think a lot of us did miss the
I wish I was there.
Okay. I wish I was there too. I was talking with Keith about this, and like that was the thing. Like the hype was real. It looked amazing, so I do wish I was there. But I'm going to Tampa instead. You know, the things that you choose in life. But So Keith and I talked about that. We just kind of put a bow on the London series, really. I wanted to get more of his perspective on like what happened there, the everything surrounding it. So it's a lot of just, we talked about MLB in London, a good amount of Yankees, just more about like the entire experience. Wanted to get his personal take on the experience and what he thought and like kind of just what he saw with the people over there. So it was fun to talk to him and kind of like debrief him, from the whole London trip. And we talked about, I don't know, for 20, 25 minutes or so. So puts a nice little bow on the London series. And, I think the biggest thing for me, just to finally wrap it up. And also, we have a couple voicemails that came in late or got missed from the last one. I'm gonna tack on to the end of this as well from on Sunday, I think it was, Sunday or Monday. But the last thought for the London thing for me was, I'm just curious to see how it goes from here. Like that's, I'm very curious to see how momentum in the UK is, takes a hold of the game of baseball. Like not Yankees, Red Sox, but the game of baseball. Like, is this going to be a catalyst or is MLB going to do this the right way and really start growing it from the bottom up, or which I fully expect because they put on this show for a reason. So that's where I'm looking kind of, eyes forward.
Why, I was just thinking as you were talking, what does MLB do to tweak things? Why wouldn't they push the games a weekend and then they could do it the weekend before the All-Star break? So players come back and they don't have to go right back into games. They can kind of just take time off. Sort of like NFL has a bye week. They play a Thursday. They'll do a bye week and then into a Thursday game or something. So you're not, you're thinking about players' health and safety where you already have days off in the season. And yes, I know some of these guys will be going to the All-Star game. But it's the same thing. The All-Star game's on a Tuesday, okay?
Yeah.
The Yankees finished on a Saturday, and they played games on a Tuesday. So you're not telling me if Aaron Judge is in the All-Star game, he could just fly to wherever the All-Star game is and get two at-bats and then be done with it? That's better than having to play an actual baseball game. So maybe that's something they think about.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's a bunch of things that they'll look at tweaking and make some adjustments. But, Yankees aren't going to be playing over there for a while anymore, so it doesn't really bother me anymore. I really don't care.
All right, follow along this weekend as Scott and the BP crews down in Tampa Invasion. I want you to document the shooting.
I'm really bad at that. You know that I'm bad at documenting like in game. You put out a tweet when you were at Rhode Island saying Clint Frazier was just up, did something. I didn't video it because I'm drinking a beer. Well, I think
I videoed his first three at bats and he first at bat, two RBI double. And then the next inning missed a pop up down the left field line.
Yeah. I think, well, I know this. I mean, usually when I'm at these events, I don't shut up and I'm just like going out because I like talking to people and hanging out rather than recording it. So, I mean, I fully expect the signal to be terrible in the trap because the trap is a dump.
It's like traveling back in time. There's no cell service.
Like, it's like I'm under a, all this metal. I fully expect the Wi-Fi to be shitty. I'm going to have my son I'm a little conflicted on this. This episode's going to be running very long. I'm conflicted on this. I have an internal conflict right now and I have to air my grievances, with myself. I'm taking Kemp to this game. So this is the game in Tampa. We're all going down. My family, my wife and I are going down, right? So we're all going, it's a 4 o'clock game. Which is great for a toddler because it's like in between naps, wide awake, before food. Like it's, if you're a parent and you've had a toddler, that's like a nice little window. So I can actually get him out there to watch a game. He likes watching the baseball. He's excited to like go into public and see things. I feel like a shitty dad taking him to his first game at Tropicana Field. I really do.
Yeah,
I feel,
that is
I'm like,
bad.
I'm like internally, I get anxiety about doing that. So this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to take him to the game and then I'm never going to talk about it with him ever again.
Don't take any, but Bevan's going to want to take pictures of him while he's there. This is going to be documented. It's going to be on Instagram.
Yeah.
Oh,
but
man.
I'm not, so he might find this out. Like this will be one of those things that he could find out when he's like 16 years old, when you're old enough to understand.
You should,
I'll tell you that your first game was at the
when trial. You take him to Yankee Stadium for the first time. Take a picture of him, but then fudge a date, like Photoshop a date before the trop in it.
Yeah.
So he just thinks thinks he went to a game at Yankee Stadium before the trop. Or go to a Steinbrenner Field and take a picture with him there. So his first baseball stadium is Steinbrenner Field, which is better than the trop.
Or Or we can just say that we're going to the aquarium because there's a stingray tank
that's
in center field.
You went to and the then aquarium, and the there Yankees, was a baseball game in the background.
And the Yankees were at the aquarium. Like that's, I think that's probably the better, because it's not a baseball field. It's a I don't even know what you call this place. It's an aquarium with like some kind of like a fluorescent green. I'm really curious like what the turf looks like in public in person.
Yeah,
because it looks like shit on TV. I don't know what it's gonna look like.
I need a few Instagram stories of you just shitting on the crappiness of it.
All right. I'll do that. But yeah, so Kemp's going, this will be his first game.
Very cool.
And we're all going, it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it. We have like 85 people going to this thing. We're all going to be sitting in section 127.
You know what, let me say also,
by the Yankees bullpen.
85 people for a road game in Tampa on basically July 4th weekend. Yeah. That's friggin' awesome.
Like, yeah, no, it's cool.
Like, that's awesome for the listeners of the show. I mean, whenever people show up to the Yankees games at Yankee Stadium and we get 200 plus people, a couple games we've pretty much sold out up to 300 tickets. It's awesome for that too. But in my mind, I'm like, okay, it's the Yankees Red Sox and it's a June weekend at Yankee Stadium. I get it, but people are going to the Trop with the BP crew. Like, it is awesome. That is,
we got people
awesome
traveling.
Thing.
So traveling. We got some people traveling. Like Andrea, we've met her 100 times at the games, at our events. She's going to be down there. We got Colton who's the one of the captains in Charlotte going down there. We got a family from Roanoke, Virginia going down there. They've been to games before. So like there's a lot of things that are, there are a lot of people traveling to go to Tropicana Field. And I think it's cool because the Yankees are there. Obviously it's become a quote rivalry, if you will. They're the next closest to us in the standings.
Second place team.
Hopefully we can put a lot of distance between us and them. That would be terrific, but it's going to be fun.
The Yankees could bury the Rays this weekend. They're right now, the Yankees are 8 games up in the loss column. If they sweep this weekend, like you might say goodnight on the Rays too.
I would love that. I would love to step on the throats of the Rays while I'm at the Trop. That would be great. Yeah. And I really want a power outage. That's what I'm rooting for. Because I got,
you just want a solid 40-minute delay in like the fifth inning because went out.
It will make me so happy if the power goes out. It really will.
How mad
if the power goes out in this place.
If something like stupid happens on Friday night's game and then Saturday is just,
I'll be very disappointed.
Like somebody hits a speaker or a catwalk on Friday.
Yeah. I need all of this nonsense to happen on Saturday.
Yeah, once you're there, like let just, who cares?
Let it rain. Just give me the bad. Give me everything to go bad. Yeah. Like, as far as the Trop, I want the Yankees to destroy them.
Oh, Yankees win 12-0, but something stupid happens.
Power outage. Yeah. Need a power outage.
All right, that's going to do it for this for us on this episode. Stay tuned for Scott and Keith recapping all of London, and we will be back talking to you Monday morning.
All right, guys, we had JJ coming on before the London series to kind of just give you an overview of what's going to happen, even though he had no idea what to expect, I think. I think when you walk in, you have something in your mind, you have an expectation level, but I don't know if it actually lives up to that. But now we got Keith on, Keith McPherson, obviously, from George's Box. Keith was over there. Him and JJ looked like they had an incredible time. I mean, I said this on the last show. Keith, the only thing that I agreed with A-Rod from the broadcast was he was talking about people having major FOMO. And I did. I told you that. I was like, man, you guys look like you're having a phenomenal time. I wish I was there. So welcome back. How was the trip?
Yeah, what's up, guys? Happy to be on the show and back-to-back days, be in your phones and headphones and, just share some more about London and the experience. And the first day, I legit cried. Like, I teared up in the stadium. It was a lot of emotion, obviously, because I proposed and just to walk into the stadium and see the energy and see what it looked like in that stadium. I just had a moment where I sat down and I'm seeing like judges throwing baseballs to like the kids in one section and Didi's getting interviewed. I'm seeing all the press and I'm like, man, I'm here. I'm in this. And it just kind of like hit me. I'm like, this is the first game in London. I made it here. I'm just a, you know, huge sports fan, Yankee fan, baseball fan, obviously. And just the like energy that was in there for people to see, like the Yankees coming out. And, you know, even like Gleyber Torres taking batting practice. And before he hit, he came out and was dribbling a soccer ball around. I'm like, this is the world stage. I'm like, everybody is tuning in for this weekend and we're physically here. And I was just like, so blessed and thankful. It was awesome. And the FOMO side, yeah, the first thing I said, I put a video up and I was like, we're here. I'm like, let us be your window. You know, let me know what you want to see. Tweet me any questions, because I would want that. If I was sitting at home and couldn't make it, or, you know, I didn't get out there, I would say, man, I want to follow someone like Keith or JJ or George's Box or Bronx Pinstripes to see what it looks like.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think you guys did a really good job in capturing kind of what it was. I mean, I feel like I have a good idea of not just what happened on the game. Obviously, we all saw the baseball, but the rest of it. And I definitely want to go into it. And yeah, you had a life-changing experience over there, not just the baseball and stuff, but you proposed. So congratulations. You and Nicole now engaged. She said yes. That's awesome.
Yeah, man. I mean, it was all kind of part of the plan. In December, I think December 20th, the tickets went on sale, and I woke up 5 a.m. and secured the tickets, and that's when I started planning in my mind, you know, I'm going to propose in London, and I also wanted to propose before we went into the game, because I knew I'd meet people that listened to George's Box, and I didn't know that in December, but I knew that now, but I knew I wanted to propose to her Friday morning before we went into any of the activities, before we met anyone. It's one thing, like I said on the other podcast, to introduce your girlfriend. It's another thing to introduce your fiance, so I timed that up great, and we ran into everybody. I think I was messaging you on Facebook chat, and I think it was like 4:15. You said, hey, I'm trying to link you up with Coley Harvey. I'm walking out of the stadium at 4:44, 30 minutes after that. Somebody runs up to me, like grabs my arm. I'm like, yo, it's Coley. And that's the first time we met, and we were, you know, talking on Twitter, talking on Instagram. We live probably a 10-minute walk from each other.
Yeah.
And the first time we met was 30 minutes after you said, hey, I was trying to connect you guys. He spotted me. And, you know, from there, I mean, the whole day weekend was phenomenal.
No, that's funny. JJ is going to love this one, but I knew that you guys were close because I had just sent Coley a t-shirt. I sent Coley a Turn the Lights Off t-shirt, the quote that he got from Urshela when they walked it off, and he had that turn off the lights, walk it off, turn off the lights quote of Yankee Stadium. I made a t-shirt of it. And I sent one to Coley, you know, just so JJ's not going to appreciate the fact that I sent him a shirt and didn't send JJ a t-shirt, but I do send shirts out.
Yeah, man. I love it. You know, even seeing fans out there, there were, there were a couple of people that had been, well, people from the UK that had been to the States to our events. And you don't know how pumped I was to see someone walk in with a July 10th, 2017 Bronx Pinstripes crew event shirt on. I'm like, yo, it's like, I don't know, the world isn't as big as you think it is. And through the internet and the power of social media and these podcasts, we can connect with people over there and meet people and, you know, set stuff up. Even Clive and James, they've booked trips. You know, Clive had his book, but James just tweeted us, hey, I'm coming to the Bronx Pinstripes event August 31st. And I don't know, it's just great to be able to run it back with those guys.
Yeah, no, it is. And I've had, we've had some of those guys. Danny was over there at the pregame as well at one point. But he's come over to the States. He's come out to an event before. He's actually just a really good dude. He and I were out till probably 2 or 3 in the morning, you know, cutting it up in New York. I was trying to show him as much as I can, trying to show him a good place to have some good pizza. We ended up with the worst possible pizza you could possibly have at like 2 a.m. because nothing was open. And just,
that's how it goes.
That's exactly how it goes.
Yeah, man. I mean, even seeing your quote in the Metro is wild. Here's a great story for you. So I proposed on the 28th. And we get on the tube, we're rushing because I had to pull off the proposal and get there to meet Clive by a certain time before we got in the stadium. And we get on the tube and I see the Metro and I see the date. And I'm like, okay, this is going to be a keepsake. I'm going to take this newspaper because it has the date printed. That's going to be my anniversary. And not long after that, I see the picture that, you know, was posted in the chat. And I open the paper and I'm like, yo, Scott's name is in this paper. I'm like, what kind of universe is this? It's like a quote from Scott, Bronx Pinstripes mentioned. I'm like, like, that's what I'm talking about, the emotions and the energy and the stuff that overcame me in the stadium. I'm like, this is perfect.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's cool. It worked out nicely, I think. Cool. Well, I mean, I think I want to know, a lot of people are interested. We all saw what we saw here. And I think that we, Andrew and I talked about this on our last show. I think as someone who was watching it, maybe just like a casual fan or just another Yankee fan, they probably thought it was all just a bunch of nonsense, a circus. I think some people thought it was really cool. The baseball, if you're looking at it from a perspective of watching baseball every single day, it was sloppy. It was bad baseball, right? But I think from what I've seen from you guys and from what I've heard from all of the people that have just reached out to us and quotes online and such, like everybody over there, everybody had really good things to say about what happened in London, at the stadium. So I'm curious to know about a couple things. Like, obviously, I want you to walk through like what happened around there. Yeah, I know you went to London Yards and like all the events that were happening around the game too. But then as well, like talking about the actual baseball itself, like this is new to them, relatively new to a lot of people. Like, what did they think of the actual product on the field?
I mean, I think everyone was impressed with it. I mean, it's tough. I didn't see the ESPN or Fox broadcast. I saw them there. You know, I saw A-Rod. I saw the coverage of it. But like, I can't speak to what it looked like through the television.
Yeah.
But there was so much going on during the game. And like, it was just a special type of baseball game to watch that, like, you didn't really care about the sloppiness and then, you know, some of the plays that weren't made or the amount of runs that were scored because, I mean, just the DJing in there, right? The guy DJing in between outs and in between pitches was on point. The music was great. I'm like, man, I rarely ever go to a baseball game and hear music like this
where people are
dancing.
No organ going on?
Yeah, there's no bum, bum, bum. Like, there's a guy like mixing club music, hip hop, and like making people dance and get out of their seats. And then, like I said, they had the authentic sounds from, you know, the Red Sox ballpark, from our ballpark, and then even mixing in their own culture. I can't speak to sitting at home and watching what ESPN presented or what Fox presented, sure. But in the stadium is great. And honestly, you can walk, like I said about the security on George's box. Like, you could walk wherever you wanted. So there's a few times, you know, JJ and I, we walked everywhere we wanted, took pictures wherever we wanted, you know, met people in different sections. The security isn't the same as it would be at a Yankee Stadium, where if you have a friend over in section 205 and you're in 208, you got to wave to them. You can't really get over there. No, you can walk right to them. And you can go get a better seat if no one's sitting in that seat. The only thing that's going to stop you is if someone has a ticket for the seat that you're claiming. But for the most part, we moved around. We walked around. I think the food was decently priced. The beer was well priced. The atmosphere was great. That roof, I don't know, that roof does something to you. It's like a circular half roof. I don't know. The first day was so hot. I will say like that was probably the toughest thing. It's like, everyone had been sweating and everyone is in there. And I think by the time the game got, you know, long, people had to get out. I said, you had a decision to make. There's last call coming for beer. The sun doesn't set out there until like 10 p.m., which is also like...
throws you off.
Yeah, it's like you're watching the game and it's getting late, but it's still bright out. The sun is still burning hot, but people are moving because it's last call. They want to get to dinner or they want to get to the pub. And even with the tube service, like... you have to go because the trains don't run all night like they run in New York. They cut off certain service in certain areas, and they're announcing it over the intercom. You know, please check the train schedules. If you have somewhere to be, check your trains because, you know, if this game goes 5 hours like it did, you might not be able to take the train to get back to your hotel.
Yeah, that's one of those logistical things that you probably don't think about. I'm sure they did think about it, knowing that the Yankees and the Red Sox play. I mean, they always play a long-ass game, but having a 4 to 5 hour, like pushing it even further than a regular Yankees Red Sox, you're running into like problems with transportation and logistics. Was it in a good area of London? Was it in a yes. convenient area?
Awesome area. So I think it's by the Westfield Stratford Mall, which has, you know, your regular like New Era store, Lids, Foot Lockers, and that type of stuff, but then also has your Starbucks, your food courts with like Subway, McDonald's, places like that. And then that is where we had the BP crew event at the Bat and Ball, which is also in that mall area. So we had, I mean, I was pleasantly surprised with that. We had the BP crew event in the bat and ball, which is for cricket, but they had some stuff in there for I didn't know that until we were in there and people were watching cricket. It's not a baseball bar, but the name is perfect for what you know what we were doing. They had some influence in there from the NFL. Like I saw upstairs, they had like ping pong tables with the Jaguars and like pictures of like Leonard Fournette and Calais Campbell. So that's cool because the NFL had already been there. But they accommodated us well. We took over table 27, and that just kind of was the Yankee area, the Bronx Pinstripes area for both days. They brought pizza to us, pitchers of beers to us, and we all kind of just talked, got to meet each other, took pictures. And, you know, when it was time to walk into the game, it's like, okay, let's walk into the game. And it was only about a 15, 20-minute walk from the bar to get into the stadium, even with security. I commend them because they had it set up where everyone isn't walking through. Like, you go to Yankee Stadium, everyone's going to, like, gate 8, gate 6, gate 4. No, your ticket told you what turnstile to go to, and they're directing traffic, so it flowed very well. If you're on the other side of the stadium, you're not – like, they won't let you walk past a certain way. Like, they have people checking tickets. Security was awesome. Like, they had this like bag check square where if your bag was too big, you couldn't bring it in. But then like if it was too big, my bag was too big. But when I got up to the thing, they just searched it and let you in. Like, security, I won't say it was lax, but it isn't as harsh as they are with you in New York. You know, like security guards in New York, you feel like threatened by. Security guards out there, you feel like, you know, they just want to make sure everyone is safe and getting to where they got to go.
Yeah, that's cool. What else did they have around the, like, things that were promoting the game from the MLB standpoint? It looked like in London Yards, that was where they had like the batting cage and all that others. So what was it? Because when you're looking at it from over here, it almost felt like, you know, Olympics or like a Super Bowl or that type of thing where they have all sorts of stuff happening around it.
Yeah, I told people it was like a festival atmosphere at Truman Brewery, which is about 15 minutes on the tube away from the stadium. That was like MLB's activation to have hats. They had a store over there. They were giving away free pennants. People could make pennants. They had this huge like Tron Legacy batting cage where the wait was 4 hours to get in.
Yeah, and I saw your video. It's wild.
Yeah, everyone was like lined up watching people just hit in this like virtual reality cage. Like, it was, you know, they were pitching. There was a pitching machine, but when you hit the ball, it would say like 300 feet and let you know if that was like a home run, double.
Yeah.
And the line for that was so long. I think JJ tried to get into it, but we had to go to the event and then go to the game. And like I said, that was, you know, 15 minutes away from the stadium. So that wasn't by the stadium, but it was super cool because, you know, you could go there, get food, get beers. That's where JJ and I did the Topps baseball card. What else did they have? They had DJs out there. They had a stage. Friday night, they had some like local rappers perform. And it's just awesome to see. If you've ever been to an All-Star game or a World Series, like, it's that kind of environment. Even when you pull up to the stadium, there's these flags with like Mookie Betts, Aaron Judge, Gary Sanchez. Like, before you're even walking up, you know you're in a Major League Baseball area. You're starting to see the logos. You're starting to see people with jerseys. And, you know, they're directing traffic to get people all into the same area. And then there's this mega store. That's where I met Clive. He's like, look for the mega store. You can't miss it. Friday, there was nobody in line for the megastore. They were still setting up. But by Sunday after the game and before the game, the line for the megastore probably was an hour to 2 hour wait. I took a video of it that I got to post. I'm like, I've never seen this many people in line for merch that they could probably order on MLB.com.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing about it, like, even just from sending out stuff from our fan shop to guys in London, it's expensive as hell for the shipping. And I don't know if MLB has, you know, the print shops and all that stuff set up over there. Yeah, I don't know what the logistics are, but yeah, it's expensive to get stuff over there, I'm sure. So when you're ordering, that's one of those things. So guys got to get it while they can and not pay, you know, up the ass for shipping.
Yeah, but I mean, they didn't care. And that shows you the enthusiasm. That shows you that the local community and not just the people, because, you know, Americans, some people came over with stuff. A few people I talked to had hats that they bought in Yankee Stadium with the London series on it with like Big Ben or like a UK flag. The local community is there and they're going to wait in line until they shut the store down and sell completely out because they want it. I even picked up on the way out a scarf that says, you know, historic first game in London, Boston versus New York, with the date and London stadium on it. And the guy I ended up, he wanted to sell them for 10 each. I was like, let me get 2 for $10, man. It's Sunday. This is over. You don't need to hold on to these. He sold me 2. So there's definitely a lot of people that wanted to take home something. I got a free program. I saved all my tickets. I got a souvenir cup. It was a historic time. So, you know, you got to have a keepsake.
For sure, for sure. Can you talk to me a little bit more about, like, what the people were thinking as far as the baseball? So, you know, obviously there's a contingent of baseball fans that exists. You know, we saw that. We've met Joey, who's a baseball Brit on Twitter. He's going around and trying to spread the word of the game itself. But in London, I mean, there were some huge events happening at the time. There was a big cricket match, if I remember correctly. There was a soccer match. Wimbledon was coming up in a couple of days. U.S. women, the women's soccer was happening. So all of these big global events were happening, and then baseball was kind of like sandwiched in there. So is the contingent of the people who were there, are they already following baseball? Are they following the Yankees? Because the time frame, it sucks if you're over there as far as trying to watch a 7 o'clock game in the East Coast. It's late as shit. So, or were there new people just trying to see what this is all about?
It was a mix, and I got to meet a lot of people. It was a mix of people. There was obviously the Americans that traveled, but there was the people over there that kind of just like, there were some people that just picked a side. Like, okay, I like the colors of the Red Sox, so I'm going to have a Red Sox hat on. Or I like the colors, or I heard of Derek Jeter back in the day, so I'm going to rep the Yankees today. But you could tell in the stadium, there were more Yankee fans. Even at London Yards, the DJ goes, "So how many Red Sox fans we got?" And you hear like a little like, "Yeah." And you're like, "How many Yankee fans?" And you're like, "Yeah." Like a louder roar. Nice. In the stadium, you know, the culture, right? These people, I'm listening to them talk. They said, you know, they come to the stadium and they watch a 45-minute half. And everybody sits down because it's soccer. And you don't want to miss anything because, you know, at any minute someone can score a goal or, you know, do something.
Yeah.
And they watch 45 minutes. They have a halftime. They come back and watch 45 minutes. Baseball's not like that, right? So, like, after the Yankees go up 6-0, people are moving out of their seats to go to the bathroom, get beer, and the Red Sox came right back, and it was like, you hear this roar in the stadium, everybody running back to their seats, like a goal was scored, like, oh, did I miss something? Yeah, you did. Like, this is going to go for a while, and so many runs were scored, so many guys were hitting. Like, Luke Voit, before he got hurt, he was on fire. LeMay, he was on fire, and it's like, It was like a weird thing because it's like you don't want to miss a moment like soccer, but this is baseball and there are breaks between outs and between innings. I think the fans enjoyed it, but they didn't really know how to like
The timing was off. Yeah, you gotta get that timing like, down.
JJ is great because JJ is rowdy in the stadium. He starts chants. He gets at Red Sox fans, and like some people don't know how to respond to that. Because they're so polite and they they don't like yell or like get at their competitors the same way that we do. You know, JJ's in their face and like, I loved it. I caught, you know, some Red Sox fan that came up to him and they were basically applauding him. They were like, "You were great." Like, imagine that you're a fan and you're entertaining other fans by the way that you fan, you know, they're like, "We wanted to get up and yell and scream and watch baseball like that. And you were leading the way." And I'm like, "Yeah, that's what we do. That's regular for us. You guys are kind of sitting here watching the cricket match. Like, this is a long cricket match where everyone's quiet and waiting for it. No, we're yelling at every pitch. We're yelling at every strike, every strikeout. Like, this is how we watch baseball." And I think some people picked it up, but you could tell it wasn't a regular, you know, baseball audience.
Yeah, no, that's funny. Someone was talking about, I think it was on Twitter, that or it might have been a mailbox in our last show, but passing food down and passing money back and forth to the vendor was something that they had never even heard of. It was like they were appreciative that we brought that to UK so that they could witness this and be like, "This is a much more efficient way of doing things."
Yeah, so that like that telephone line, you might have a couple Americans in the seats and some you know, UK people in the seats, and they don't get it that hey, they're sending down this popcorn for the guy three seats behind you, you know, or like, "What's this money in my hand for?" Oh, there's a guy with beer and it's, you know, 6.5 pounds, 650 pounds to get this beer. And it's about to be last call and it's urgent. Get this guy his beer right now. I saw a bunch of that. And it was even great to hear, you know, the guys calling out, you know, like, be a here with their like accents.
It's gotta be wild. Know? Just the atmosphere itself, hearing the different accent, the accents of the guys from the UK, and then watching your Yankees out on the field. It's got to be one of those just surreal moments.
It was a trip. Like I kept saying, I'm like, we're in like a weird parallel universe with this. So many different things, but like still our game, still our team, but so many other different things. And, you know, I heard that they trained, you know, some of the staff how to sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game. Because they don't really know the words.
That's funny. Someone was sending
like,
out.
They had to practice.
I saw on Twitter that there was like an informational, you know, like a motion graphic that they had on the broadcast. I didn't see it on the one here. I assume it was only for the UK or whatever. But it was like rules of baseball, and it was like super cheesy. Someone was like, "What are they sending us here? Like, what are they? What are they putting out here?"
They used the scoreboard. That's one thing. We were like, we want replays on the scoreboard. We want like, you know, pitch count and, you know, how fast the pitch is. They're using the scoreboard to give people information and also, like, you know, suggest that, you know, you treat your fellow fan, you know, with courtesy and, you know, basically breaking down stuff like Brett Gardner goes up and it's like, Brett Gardner is the only Yankee to play in the new and old Yankee Stadium. It's like, okay, that doesn't really do anything for the game, but like, I guess that's a cool fun fact to have up there while he hits, every time he hits. They're just trying to, like, I think they were just trying to educate, you know, the fans. And it helped, and I'm sure it worked. And I know there's a lot of people, even walking out, you know, there's a lot of questions of, like, so what's next? What's next? Like, now this is over. Like, what's next? And, you know, we're telling people, okay, the Cardinals and Cubs will be here. I think next year the dates are June 13th and 14th, so it's a little earlier. I don't know. We'll see what it looks like then. I want to go back. It's the type of thing now that, like, I understand it now. When I walked in, at first, I was quiet, and I was just taking everything in and just trying to see how everything was going and flowed. Now, I feel like a veteran, and I have friends that are going, and I'd like to say, hey, yo, we're going to go over here, and then we're going to do this. We're going to, you know, we're going to get coffee, we're going to get food here, and then we're going to go into the stadium, because now I have the experience.
Yeah. All right, so let's put a bow on it. You kind of just touched on it a little bit, but the show has left town now. They put on the Yankees-Red Sox, biggest rivalry you could possibly find, pretty much in sports. They brought what looked like an entertainment factor to the UK. A lot of runs scored. I feel like if you're trying to introduce something to a new place, go with offense over defense, over pitching, right? Like that's what sells. Chicks dig the long ball. A lot of offense to me would be a good selling point. So that was a good thing. How do you see the, like, just from your talking to some of the fans over there and knowing how crazy they are about soccer and cricket and, you know, tennis and whatever else it is, do you see this, you know, picking up more, or is this something that, like, I think that they're probably going to have to do similar to what the NFL does and, like, start with the youth, right? Like, do those flag football programs. They need to get into the little leagues or start little league over there. I don't even know what the youth baseball is, but, like, really get it going on that level so that it can grow up. Kids can start growing up playing and understand it and then get into it more. But, yeah, what are your, like, just final thoughts on the whole thing and, like, where you think it's going?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I almost forgot a big activation they had. So MLB Play Ball had right next to the stadium a big field area where there were batting cages where you could throw and see how fast you threw.
Yeah.
And there were kids out there just with gloves and balls just, you know, throwing. I even saw like Team London and even some high school age kids or college age kids that were there just to, like, you know, they look like ball players. They had the hats, the sunglasses, you know, the gloves with them, the book bags with their bats in them. So I think there has to be some type of plan in place or, you know, some type of thing, because they were taking people's emails and signing people up for different things. And there were definitely coaches out there from different areas. There has to be some type of plan in place to grow the game from the ground up.
Yeah.
I saw a bunch of little kids out there, you know, that just were like, big-eyed and looking around, and you could tell that, you know, they knew. And, like, even when, you know, Judge is amazing. Judge and some of the other players on Friday were signing everything they could sign for these kids. And you could tell some of these kids didn't really know who the player, like Edwin Encarnacion was signing stuff. They didn't really know who he was, but they were pumped to physically get, like, a hat signed or a ball signed. And that is enough to change someone's, like, future as far as, I was at the London series when I was six. Now I want to watch this game. I want to learn this game. I want to play this game. And maybe one day I can grow up and represent London in America and be on a Major League Baseball team. I know there's got to be some, like, grassroots stuff going on, because how could there not be? There was such a huge stamp put on Major League Baseball in the area from, like I said, play ball to the players interacting with the kids at batting practice. And, you know, for a kid to see that huge stadium that they're used to watching soccer in turned into a baseball field. So, I mean, I hope to see it. Like, I love this whole idea. I hope they keep doing London games and other cities, and I hope that we see in a few years, you know, we're going to watch baseball forever. So I hope in a few years, 10, 15, whatever it is, we see that, like, first star in Major League Baseball that tells a story about being 10 years old at the London series.
Yeah. No, that's cool. And I think that, I mean, just from the other side of it too, when we're watching all the interviews and all the TV stuff, they were interviewing Manfred, and you can tell, like, he's trying to expand through Europe. I mean, he was already talking about another city in Europe potentially. So there's definitely a grand plan for this, and they're, you know, they're, London is by far not the stop of it. But I think the NFL led the way with how to do something. And obviously baseball is different. It's just the timing of the games on the, like, physically in the day are just very different than the NFL. So I think it's harder to translate over there because of that. But yeah, no, it seems like a good thing, man. And thanks for coming on and kind of giving us a nuts and bolts of this whole thing and tying a nice little bow on it. Because I know a lot of people were just curious, really. I think curiosity was one of the biggest things from people over here. Like, we know what we're watching. We're watching baseball, but it didn't feel like baseball normally. It just felt like something very, very different. And I think people were curious.
The last thing I'll say with regards to the NFL will bring over, you know, the Bills and the Raiders to play a game that comes on at 9 a.m. in the States. Major League Baseball did other, like, places. Like, when I was in the fan cave, we did the first game was the Dodgers versus Diamondbacks in Australia. That's not as big of a draw. I don't know how many, you know, fans you're really getting over there. And then to start this season, we all pretty much didn't even realize Major League Baseball kicked off opening day in Tokyo with the Mariners and A's. I think they did a great job by booking Red Sox, Yankees for the first game in London. Because, you know, like I said, the NFL has some of these lesser-known teams that don't have as big fan bases. And then in the States, we're not watching. No, you put the Yankees and Red Sox in London for the first game. Everyone in the States is watching, and everyone in the UK is physically there. So it was awesome. I loved it. And, you know, props to them.
Cool, man. Well, guys, again, thanks, Keith, for coming on. Go download, subscribe, and listen to Keith and JJ on George's Box. You got any last words for the people?
No, thanks for all the support, and make sure you guys come out to the next BP Crew event. Like, that is where we really meet everyone, talk to everyone, have these moments that keep building this thing. July 20th, come out to Yankee Stadium. We're playing the Rockies. JJ and I will be there. Scott and Andrew. Will Andrew be there?
I think Andrew's going to be there at this one. I think he's going to show up.
Get your tickets, because, like, you're not going to have more fun at a Yankee game than going to the game with us.
Yeah, no, that's true. It is a blast. There's a good camaraderie building with the whole crew now. So they're a lot of fun. All right, man, I'll talk to you soon.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep.
I must be out or I pick up the phone.
Where could I be? Believe it or not, I'm not home.
Hey, what's going on, Bronx Pinstripe? This is Austin. I'm coming from Rochester. Love you guys' show. You guys are talking about who I would invite to my wedding. I'm going with Boyd. He seems like a really high-energy guy. Seems like he'd be great at a party. And that's exactly who I would think he's perfect for. Let me know what you guys think. Thanks. See ya.
Hey, it's Steve, captain of BP Crew Denver. I was thinking that we should probably have these games over the 4th of July so we have a giant fireworks show right in England State. But looks like we brought some fireworks of our own. We dumped a bunch of tea in Boston Harbor, and those are some revolutionary war jokes. But fucking love it. Love the Yankees beating the shit out of Boston in Europe. Let's keep it going, guys.
Wanted to call and say, fuck the Red Sox. Red Sox suck. Win another, 11-4? Good day.
Hey, how you doing? This is Enrique, the captain of the BP Crew South Florida. Man, I cannot be more proud of our boys this weekend. We put it on the Red Sox. We embarrassed them in front of the whole world. Judge did his thing. Didi flashed the leather. Let's get home and embarrass the Mets next. Let's go, Yankees. Can't wait for the championship this season, baby.
Let's go. Bronx Prince Christ Podcast. Turn up. Killing the Red Sox. Let's hope we can do it in October and get number 28. Let's go.
Hey, Tim Stripers, this is Eric from Syracuse. I don't even know if you guys even fucking listen to these things anymore, but...
All right, quick time out. Eric in Syracuse, I just wanted to play this so that you knew I was listening to you and I hear you. And we got voicemails back in action, tightened all that stuff up, and now we're good. Voicemails resume.
In case you ever do play on the show again, it's a great win on Sunday. Nice to foul just split in Chicago after everything went haywire the first two games. Like, great to see the big maple get back on track, and... I hope you're not stopped in playing these voicemails because you're devoting time to JJ's stupid fucking show. All right, take it easy, bud.
Hey, guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.